Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, November 12th, 2020, the first of our off-season podcasts, which will drop every so often, or as news dictates, and we are taping this right after the MVP announcement. Producing from somewhere away from his home in Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney from my home studio in New York. The MVPs, as I say, were just announced in the American League at Jose Abreu of the White Sox. Freddie Freeman of the Braves. Here's Freddie Freeman talking about the award.
Oh, my goodness. So many emotions right now. This is absolutely incredible. Never did I ever think something like this could happen. You know, my dad and I, we were just playing, you know, taking batting practice and having fun when I was a kid. And, you know, look where we are now. It's amazing. And for me to be able to share this with my family, it's pretty special.
The rookies of the year, Devin Williams of the Milwaukee Brewers in the National League and the Mariners, Kyle Lewis in the American League. Perry Minasian, an assistant general manager with the Braves, became the Angels' new general manager, that announcement coming from the Angels on Thursday. Jeff Luhnow has sued the Astros for breach of contract. He's seeking more than $22 million after alleging his firing was through a quote-unquote negotiated solution between owner Jim Crane and Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred. Alex Cora, earlier this week, the Red Sox announced his rehiring as their manager, and he talked about his role in the Astros' sign-stealing scandal.
I was spending time at home for the wrong reasons. And for that, I want to apologize. I deserve what happened this year. It was something that is something that I'm not proud of it. But, you know, we went through the whole process with the commissioner's office, the Department of Investigations. And at the end, I got my penalty and I serve it. I want to apologize to the organization to put him in such a tough spot coming into the season. You know, I never thought that that's what was going to happen. I never thought I was going to be in that situation, but I was watching from afar. And like I told Haim and I told everybody else, the whole group, when we decided to part ways, sorry for what happened and sorry for what happened during the year. As a leader, as a person that enjoys the game and loves to manage, put this organization in a tough spot. And for that, I'm sorry.
The Cy Young Award voting went down as we expected. Shane Bieber won unanimously in the American League, and Trevor Bauer became the Reds' first pitcher ever to win the National League Cy Young Award. The managers of the year, Kevin Cash of the Rays, Don Mattingly of the Marlins. Kevin Cash was on SportsCenter with Bucci talking about that decision, the last game of the World Series. Bucci asked him how often he thinks about that decision.
It enters my mind every single day. There's a lot of people that are not going to allow that, but I understand it. I respect it. And I think we're all in these positions to give the best answers possible. And the thought was, that was what we thought was the best, or I thought was the best thing to do to help us win the game. Unfortunately, it didn't work. It was a sickening outcome, but that's the way it goes. But just so proud of this team and want the focus so badly to go back on how special of a group the Tampa Bay Rays were this year.
But it wasn't going to. Bucci asked him, would he make the same call now that he did in Game 6?
I would make the same decision again. Just hope for a much better outcome. And that's, you know, being so respectful of everybody's opinion that's out there. But that's what we do. And we pride ourselves on getting the most favorable matchups possible. And in that moment, thought that that was the best matchup. Now, they don't always work. And certainly that one didn't. But I think we have to stick to our thoughts, the information that is provided, and do what's best to help the team win on a nightly basis.
Taylor, I'm going to bring in here, I think you'd agree with me, you can't handle this whole episode better in terms of the answers than Kevin Cash has.
So polished. And to be, I guess, fair to him, but he's probably sat and practiced that answer many times over. So I'm glad he was able to execute in the moment, and hopefully he can move on as best he can from this, because I'm sure this has just been a nightmare for him.
Well, and you know what? Kevin knows this. He's going to be asked that about that decision next spring. And the spring after that, and the year after that, the rest of his career, that's just the way it goes when you're in those positions. All right, the biggest news in baseball is new ownership for the New York Mets. New Mets owner Steve Cohen and team president Sandy Alderson spoke with reporters earlier this week, and he was asked about being in win-now mode. Give a listen.
First, I think we have a really good core of players already. And so I think we're starting with a pretty good base, you know, so we've got to work on parallel tracks here. Obviously, we've got to build up our baseball management team. We've got to install processes and ways of doing things that sustain excellence over a long period of time. But we want to win today, which means, you know, we're going to have to make sharp baseball decisions on, you know, who to bring in and who to go after. And that's Sandy's department, like I've said, and they're going to be the experts and they're going to make recommendations. But, you know, I'm not in this for a short-term fix. I'm really like thinking about this of trying to build a sustainable franchise. Okay, I don't want to be good 1 year and bad 3 years. Okay, I want to be good every year. And that's the goal. So, you know, that's the type of business and, you know, team I want to build.
Over and over and over again in the next 5 years, you're going to hear this clip from Steve Cohen's press conference.
You know, only one team wins the World Series every year, right? So that's a pretty high bar. But if I don't win a World Series in the next 3 to 5 years, you know, I'd like to make it sooner, then, you know, obviously, you know, I would consider that slightly disappointing.
All right, we're going to be talking with Steve Gelbs of SNY about that, Jeff Passan as well. Before we get to Jeff, Steve, and Paul Imbakides, how does 25-year-old two-time MVP Giannis get drafted 15th overall in a weak draft class? Woj investigates the twists and turns that led to a franchise and league-altering selection in 2013. A three-part series that tells this unique story, including interviews with individuals close to the process, as well as a one-on-one sit-down with Giannis himself. Check out the Woj Pod special, The Giannis Draft, dropping Monday, November 16th, wherever you find your podcast.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Steve Gelbs covers the New York Mets for SNY. And Steve, breaking news, the Mets have won the winter. And we haven't even started the winter, but I think we can announce that based on where the industry is, based on what we heard from Steve Cohen the other day, almost declaring war on the National League East, talking about the expectation to win the World Series in the next 3 to 5 years. As someone who's covered the Mets for a long time, a big market team that never really acted like a big market team when it came to spending, how different is this?
Well, you just have to expect right now that they're going to be in on anyone and everyone who makes sense for them. So it's certainly a different way of looking at things when you've got an owner now who, I mean, let's be perfectly frank. We're not talking about someone who is going to be, you know, at the top in terms of resources by a little. We're talking about someone whose net worth is more than the next three owners in Major League Baseball combined. And I think that that fact was already out there. But what you saw with the press conference the other day is that not only does Steve Cohen have those resources, but he is all in on using those resources to the best of his ability. You know, he talked about the line that stood out to me was, I realized that I could make millions of people happy. And at his core, you know, Steve Cohen is a true blue and orange Mets fan. And I think he thought about it from his perspective of, you know, I know how happy I will be if the Mets are a perennial winner. And I have the power, this rare power as a diehard Mets fan, to be the one that brings those championships, that brings that success. And, you know, every indication the other day was that he is going to do everything in his power to make this team an immediate contender.
So you'll remember those hours in which there was some question whether or not Mayor de Blasio was going to somehow block Steve Cohen from becoming owner of the Mets. So when I heard that, I thought, no, there are a lot of voters who are Mets fans that he would he would ruin his relationship with forever going forward. So that's not going to be a problem. What are some examples that you've heard of the excitement level of Mets fans over this change?
Well, you know, it's been pretty evident. I generally, you know, I hate to use just social media as a gauge, right, but in this case, you know, it's very rare that you get 100% buy-in, it seems, across the board on social media. And certainly that's what you've seen. I mean, every single person that I've interacted with, that I've seen interact with either the Mets official Twitter, the SNY official Twitter, my Twitter account, it's just this, you know, overwhelming sense of excitement. And I think that extends to just people in my life who are Mets fans. And I can't tell you, Buster, the amount of texts that I've been receiving over the last couple of weeks. And then certainly as that press conference was happening, and I think anybody that watches that press conference would agree that it was a pitch perfect opening presser by Steve Cohen. You know, as I was a part of that, my phone was buzzing off the hook with people that I'd spoken to a lot recently, with people that I hadn't heard from in years. Anybody who was a Mets fan that I knew seemed to reach out on that day, expressing just this, you know, insane level of excitement that this team is going to be a team to be reckoned with each and every year.
Yeah, I heard from a highly ranked executive on a National League team afterward, and he said if I were to grade them on a scale of 1 to 100, he and Sandy Alderson would have gotten 100 for how perfect that press conference was. All right, try to help me separate sort of the wheat from the chaff on players that you think they'll legitimately take a look at this winter. And you know, I'll just ask you to guess who's going to be on the team, because my guess is that I think George Springer is going to wind up on the team, and I think there's a decent chance of Francisco Lindor. How about you?
Yep, I think those two are definite possibilities. I think Trevor Bauer is a definite possibility. You know, Buster, the really unique thing about this particular offseason and the way the Mets are positioned is that, you know, you can make an argument that you know, the three best or three of the best free agents out there are the exact three needs that the Mets clearly have going into next season. You've got catching with JT Realmuto. You've got, you know, starting pitching with Trevor Bauer, and you've got center field with George Springer. And I would not be surprised if the Mets landed two of those three guys. You know, I've kind of been leaning towards thinking that they'll end up with George Springer and Trevor Bauer if you go with two of the three. And then I think they're very well positioned to make the trade for Francisco Lindor as well. You know, not only are they, you know, again, are these positions of extreme need for the Mets, but they're uniquely set because of the fact that it seems that every other owner is pulling back when Steve Cohen is going to come in and go, you know, all in, pedal to the metal. So I would not be surprised if, you know, if three of those four guys, if you're talking about Realmuto, Springer, Bauer, Lindor, it would not stun me if three of those four were on the team next year. And I would expect that two of those four is, you know, I don't know how you want to say if anything like that is likely, but I would not be remotely surprised if that happened.
Wow. All right. So when George Steinbrenner bought the Yankees back in 1973, he famously said that he was going to be an absentee owner. He was going to let the professionals do the work, and then we saw what happened. He basically bulldozed them forever. Steve Cohen said something very similar the other day. He made it clear, he'll be involved. He said he was a quick study. What's your sense of what he's going to do in running the team?
I think that we have to wait and see with this one. And, you know, we should take him at his word right now. I don't feel like Steve Cohen is going to be someone who right off the bat is going to be in on every single minor discussion. He says he's not someone who micromanages. He talks about the success he's had, you know, in his day job, quotes, as he puts it, just by hiring smart people and letting them do their thing. I think that's a big reason why Sandy Alderson is here. He, you know, trusts that Sandy knows how to run a baseball operation and wants to lean on him to do that work. You know, all that being said, Steve Cohen is clearly someone who is not going to settle for anything other than excellence. The words that were used in that press conference, whether it was from Sandy talking about the franchise could be iconic, or whether it was Steve Cohen simply saying that I'm not in this to be mediocre, that's just not my thing. That says to me that, you know, maybe he won't be involved in every discussion. I don't think he's going to micromanage, but he is going to hold people accountable. And if the job is not done to his satisfaction, I don't think he's going to stick around and wait for things to happen. He also said at one point that I'm paraphrasing here, but he said something like, I'm not into letting people learn on the job on my dime. So, he's going to hold people to a high standard, but I don't think he's going to micromanage.
It's going to be fun. You are going to have a blast. That will be the most watched team in baseball next year, the most fun team in baseball for sure. All right, Steve, thanks for doing this.
Buster, appreciate it as always.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Jeff Passan covers baseball for ESPN. And Jeff, let's just start real quick with the awards. Was there anything in the 4 days of awards that surprised you?
Yeah, you know, I think Devin Williams winning Rookie of the Year surprised me a little bit. Typically, when we look at Rookies of the Years in the past, you don't have a guy with no saves who's a relief pitcher anywhere near that award. And I think part of it, honestly, is the pandemic season and the fact that Alec Bohm didn't get 140 games and that Cabrian Hayes was up for only half the year as opposed to 120 or so games that he would have played in a full season. But seeing Devin Williams win that award, it surprised me a little. I think it's part of the evolution of how we look at relief pitching now. Over a 60-game season, I think there's a really good case to be made that he was the best rookie this year and that he was the best reliever in baseball. And I really love watching his changeup. It's just such a great pitch. It might be like the single most enjoyable pitch to watch a guy in the big leagues throw these days.
Would he have been your choice?
Yeah, he would have been. I had the easiest vote of all. I had American League Cy Young, and Shane Bieber, of course, was unanimous there. I did not agree with Jose Abreu for AL MVP. I thought Jose Ramirez was just slightly marginally a little bit better, but totally understood why he won that. I had Bauer as National League Cy Young. I had Freddie Freeman as American League MVP. I think for the most part, the BBWA did a good job this year.
Yeah, I'm with you on Jose Ramirez. I don't know how, with this offensive statistics relatively close, I don't know how Jose Ramirez doesn't win just because of the defensive impact and the other things that he does.
He's such a good base runner too. It's like one of those sneaky things where you don't appreciate him unless you watch him every day, but he's a smart baseball player. And the fact that he plays a position at third base of impact and that he plays it well, I think that in this situation, Buster, wins above replacement actually hindered him. Because if you look beyond Fangraphs, where he was the leader, if you looked at Baseball Reference WAR and if you looked at WARP over at Baseball Prospectus, both of them dinged his defense. And I'm sorry, in a 60-game season, like over 162 games, I'm already skeptical of defensive metrics for the most part. Over a 60-game season, I just think you should throw him out. I just think you got to do the eye test at that point. And Jose Ramirez is probably an average third baseman. And I will take the average third baseman with almost identical stats to a first baseman, even if he is the best defensive first baseman on the planet.
And Jose Abreu is certainly not that. No. Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. All right, so I wanted to get you on because I want to talk about the offseason. It's going to be an absolutely fascinating offseason, as the entire season was fascinating because of the context. And I think before we get into specific names about what's going to happen with the best free agents, I think setting that context is so important because there's going to be a lot of weird stuff happening and people are going to wonder why it's happening, and it's because of the context. Where are we right now when it comes to baseball in 2021 and the collective bargaining agreement, which is set to expire a year from now?
We are in a very similar place, I think, to where we were in about April, which is that because we have no idea where the pandemic is going to be going over the next few months, it's impossible to map out a season. It's impossible to know whether, you know, come the middle of February, when players typically report to spring training, these facilities are even going to be open, or if they're going to be open, who's going to show up, who's going to want to show up. It's impossible to know whether there are going to be fans in the stands. And if there aren't fans in the stands at the beginning of the season, whether it's because of local jurisdictions determining that they can't be or otherwise, are some teams going to want to play and some teams not going to want to play? It's just a big question mark right now. And what Major League Baseball and the Players Association are trying to do is juggle way too many balls, but there's no other choice, right? Like, they have to be epidemiologists, or at least consult with the best epidemiologists out there and try and project where things are going to be going. They have to get a sense of the comfort level of their players, of their employees, and of owners as to whether they want to start the season on time or not. And if they decide not to, Buster, if they decide not to play 162 games, we're going to be running into the same issue that we did last year, when the season was truncated and the sides couldn't come together on an agreement. And not only are we doing that, but we would be doing that against the backdrop of a collective bargaining agreement that's expiring December 1st. So there are so many different factors playing into this, whether it's the pandemic, whether it's the ability to get vaccines, whether it's labor relations, that it's all a big jumbled mess right now. And to try and prognosticate where we're going to be a few months down the road, and let alone a few weeks down the road, right now is impossible.
I think you're right in saying that we are going to potentially be in the same place, or we are in the same place now that we were in April, but it's also possible that we could be in a better place if suddenly within a month we get really great news on a vaccine. It's also possible, I think, that we're going to be in a worse place when we get to February because of the CBA, and you begin to wonder how that's going to factor in. And I also wonder, and this takes us to the next question about what's going to happen in the winter market. I wonder how the feelings are going to be on both sides if we, in fact, have this dramatic slowdown this winter with 250 unsigned free agents. You know, how those veterans and their feelings are going to manifest, and what's going to happen between the Players Association and MLB.
Here's the scary part, Buster. We are about 3 weeks away from a bomb detonating, and that is the tender date.
Yep.
And for those who don't know what that means, every year, arbitration eligible players, meaning the people who have at least 3 years of service, there are some people in the two plus service class, but mostly with three 4 or 5 plus years of service, there is a date by which they must be tendered or offered a contract. Now, the arbitration market is already thrown into flux this year because when the season was instituted by Rob Manfred, it went back to the March agreement between the sides that did not lay out what arbitration is going to look like. In a typical year, you have a sense of how players are going to be valued because arbitration is a system that's based on past precedent. Well, all of a sudden, you have a bunch of players who have like 40% of the stats that they've had in the past. And if there's no agreement between the sides, then players are going to be compared not to those who are actually their peers, but those who have far lesser counting stats than them. And thus, the arbitration salaries could go down. That being said, I think that teams see the number of free agents that there are already and say, well, if there are this many guys out there now, and if we don't tender contracts to this many more guys, then the market is just going to collapse and we're going to be able to get a player who would have been a $4 or $5 million player in the past and get him for $2 or $3 million. When you combine that with clubs going around and saying, we lost a ton of money last year and we just don't have the payroll we did in the past, that just compounds the problem. So when that happens, it's going to be very interesting to see where the market goes and how many names, like real names, guys who have been productive players in the past, not just end up with lower salaries, but don't end up with jobs at all.
Yeah, Taylor, when you look for a title for this podcast, you can say it's complicated because it absolutely is. And Jeff, everything you said is right there. And then think about this. The arbitration system is built on a financial landscape that no longer exists. And you know, one of the more interesting guys in that realm to me is going to be Chris Bryant. For example, about where he stands, with his salary. Take us through what you think might happen with Chris Bryant as we start to move to ground level and look at individual players.
I mean, look, Chris Bryant is somebody who in the arbitration system is set to make $20 or so million. Now, maybe I'm being naive here in thinking that the Chicago Cubs would just non-tender him and that Chris Bryant would hit free agency a year early. I mean, I almost feel like that's Scott Boras's dream, right? You have a guy who hits free agency a year earlier than he would have otherwise. But as teams have some, belt tightening going on, these are the types of things that in the past would not have even been under consideration, that at very least are being discussed, and not just with the Cubs, but throughout baseball now, when you have a system that works like arbitration does. And, Jesse Rogers has reported this, and I think it's not a secret that the Cubs have looked to trade Chris Bryant and are looking for a partner there. It's going to be a difficult thing to do, though, especially with the salary being what it is, and with teams already saying, hey, we are not going to have that kind of money this year. And when you're Kevin Gausman and when you're Marcus Stroman and you're accepting the qualifying offer and getting $18.9 million for the upcoming season, you got to feel pretty fortunate considering what's going to happen to some of their brethren.
Yeah, and along those lines, this is what I'm hearing from agents, from team executives in terms of what's going to play out. They really believe, as you said, the bomb is going to be dropped on December 2nd with a non-tender date. Leading up to that, you're going to see possibly some trades, more likely teams just essentially cutting free arbitration eligible players.
Yep.
Because they feel like with a pool of free agency, they can get players who are comparable at maybe better prices. There is an expectation that some veterans who like where they are, and we saw Yuli Gurriel do this in October, will essentially work out a deal for less money and salary. We saw Josh Tomlin basically say, okay, I'll take $1 million to pitch for the Braves in 2021. And then what I'm hearing is a lot of people think, except for the big names, that after that, it is going to be deep freeze all over the place for most free agents. What are you hearing?
Yeah, I think so. And even with the big name free agents, I think it's going to take a while. Now, I have heard, Buster, over the last 24 hours or so, that the starting pitching market may be moving a little bit. And that, once Gausman and Stroman went off the market, it's almost like the trade deadline, right? When you have players who play positions, it's tough to trade guys, a lot tougher than a pitcher who can slot in among one of five. And there are plenty of pitching hungry teams out there that don't want to be left out in the cold. So, you know, looking beyond Trevor Bauer, at guys like Masahiro Tanaka, Charlie Morton, Jake Odorizzi, Garrett Richards, you know, Drew Smiley's a name I'm hearing a lot, Taijuan Walker, Mike Minor, Corey Kluber. I think there's a chance that the starting pitching market could be the first one to move this offseason. But the position players, man, there are a lot of guys out there, and the relief pitchers too, especially. Even though every team needs a relief pitcher, and most teams need multiple relief pitchers, there are going to be so many of them available. They are just going to wait them out, and I cringe to think what's going to happen to some of these relievers in terms of what they're expecting versus what they might actually get.
Yeah, as a GM said to me the other day, those days of Wade Davis getting $51 million or, you know, Mark Melanson getting $60 million, forget it. Those days, I mean, I'll tell you what, with Brad Hand. Go ahead.
Yeah, Liam Hendricks is going to be really interesting, though, because Liam Hendricks is clearly the elite guy on the market this year. But, you know, 32 years old on opening day, a guy who has emerged late in his career. And, I mean, remember what he did in the postseason this year. It was absolutely awesome. Just a gutty performance, and loved seeing him do that. So he's a guy you can trust in late innings. But, you know, is he going to be able to get Melanson money? Like, that's a hard sell this year.
Exactly. All right. Give me a read on the three best guys in the free agent market: JT Realmuto, Trevor Bauer, George Springer.
Realmuto might be the most interesting one to me. And let me just start by saying, I think all winter long, we're just going to hear the Mets with all three of them.
Yep.
Just because that is what Steve Cohen coming into the picture has done. And it's going to be interesting going forward, because I think we're going to hear the Mets with everyone in the future until Steve Cohen illustrates that he's not going to be spending as much in free agency as people may believe. And, you know, as somebody whose job it always was in hedge funds to find undervalued assets and not to necessarily spend on blue chip assets that may be going down in value or not providing as much, I don't know that he's going to be so inclined to just lavish free agents with money. But it's clear the Mets want to improve and want to be the best team in the National League East next year, and they need a catcher. It's clear that the Philadelphia Phillies love JT Realmuto, but you know, the sense that I've gotten from the Phillies is they're not going to be big spenders this offseason. So, you know, I don't know where Realmuto's market is going to end up. I think in the end, George Springer probably is going to be the highest paid player. And whether it's the Mets or the White Sox or even back with the Astros, I think a lot of people want him. But as one person pointed out to me yesterday, he said, who was the last center fielder to sign a big free agent contract and play center field the whole time? And his answer was Lorenzo Cain, but, you know, it's possible Lorenzo Cain's going to be moving to a corner at some point. And George Springer's a guy who's played both center field and right field, but he's going to be 31 on opening day. The notion that he's going to sign for 5 years and is going to be in center field the whole time, I hope so, because that means he ages really well, but that's tough to see. And Trevor Bauer, of course, is the wild card. You know, I love the idea of him signing a one-year deal, just because watching somebody at the peak of his powers go out and try to do like a Roger Clemens thing, where he's just going a year at a time and maximizing it as much as he can, is a noble endeavor. But man, that's a hard thing to do, to go and repeat the performance of winning a Cy Young Award. And so I think if Bauer can get 5 years at $30 million a pop, he would have to take something like that.
Oh, yeah, especially given where the numbers have gone with the salaries around baseball. Of those three guys, I think if I were to, you know, pick one thing to bet the family farm back in Vermont on, it would be George Springer going to the Mets. It just feels like a good fit. Right-handed hitting outfielder. He plays center field right away. Helps to balance their lineup. Local guy. Checks every box.
I totally agree with you, actually. And I have heard the same thing from pretty reliable people. The only question for me at that point is, what do the Mets do with their outfield? Like, does Jeff McNeil move to third base? If so, what do you do with J.D. Davis? Where does Dominic Smith play? Do you trade him? How about Brandon Nimmo? Michael Conforto was awesome last year. I mean, it helps, Buster, if there is a designated hitter in the National League, but you got to factor that in as well. And the interesting thing is, I think Mike Bonzani slacked me this a couple days ago. The Mets, it was either OPS, I think it was OPS Plus, was like fifth all time. It was 122 this year. Like, the Mets really hit this year.
Yep.
It was the bullpen, and it was the mess of a starting rotation. And that's why if they're going to go out and sign free agents, the two best fits in terms of what they don't have are Trevor Bauer and JT Realmuto.
Yep. Well, they're going to wind up with somebody good.
Yes,
it seems like they seem like it's one of the major questions that, I ask agents and I ask the club executives, who's actually spending money this winter? The Mets clearly are. Besides that, the Blue Jays, there's a lot of thought that the San Francisco Giants, who have so many contracts coming off the books in the next 2 years, could look at this soft market and say, let's take advantage of it. And there is a theory around baseball that after everything that all the criticism that Jerry Reinsdorf took over the hiring of Tony La Russa, everything that's gone on that you reported with his second or at least his second DUI that we know about, that there's going to be pressure on the White Sox to make sure that the team is good if, in fact, they keep La Russa. Who else do you think might be spending?
You know, another team, if we're staying in the American League Central, I think the Minnesota Twins are going to be aggressive. And Nelson Cruz clearly is a priority there, but they also need some starting pitching. And so I think the Twins are going to spend this offseason. With Perry Minasian being hired as the Los Angeles Angels GM, I think that's going to be the start of them moving in the starting pitching market. They did a really good job. Billy Epler did in acquiring Dylan Bundy last year and have him under control for another year. Andrew Heaney's guy, his ERA didn't quite reflect what the peripherals did. And he's a solid piece of that rotation, but they need starting pitching help. And when you have Mike Trout and he has been in the big leagues for coming up on a decade now, and he has played in 3 playoff games and not won a single postseason game, it is a mandate that you must surround him with better talent. And that's on Artie Moreno as much as it is anyone, because right now there's just not a whole lot in the pipeline in terms of starting pitching. And they need to go out and get guys and try to win now.
All right, last two for you. Give me 45 seconds on these two topics. Francisco Lindor, what teams do you see him play on him?
Oh boy, I hate to go back to this, Buster, but doesn't he fit the Mets really well?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, and that's where I can see the Mets going out and buying a free agent, whether it is Springer, Realmuto, or Bauer, and making a trade for Francisco Lindor. And it would not, you put out there, and I thought it was a really smart column, how Chris Antonetti fits really well in their president of baseball operations shop. If it's not Chris Antonetti, though, could be Mike Chernoff, their general manager as well. You know, his father runs WFAN. He's a New York kid, and coming home and bringing a shortstop with him would be awfully good. I don't see the Yankees in play on Lindor. I know they've been mentioned a lot and maybe that changes, but at this point, I just don't think that they're quite the fit for him, especially because if we look at the shortstop market next offseason, Buster, with Javier Baez, potentially with Carlos Correa, with Corey Seager and with Trevor Story, the Yankees can just go out and buy a shortstop. And I suppose the same for the Mets, but if they get Lindor, they would hope to do a Mookie Betts type situation with him.
And last one, I wrote about this today. The team that's absolutely confused me the most right now are the Philadelphia Phillies with how they're handling their front office situation, especially in the face of what else is going on in their division with the emergence of Steve Cohen and the Mets.
Yeah, it's almost like they're just letting it ride. And there's a lot of confusion around the game when it comes to what the Phillies are doing too, because it, you know, when you go out and sign Bryce Harper to a $330 million contract, it's almost the expectation that you are going to build around him. And when you have somebody like Alec Bohm coming up and doing what he did last year, it's like the Phillies are close. You know, they've got Nola too. They've got Zach Wheeler too. I almost wonder, Buster, if they're just going to lay low and start sniping relief pitchers as the market gets flooded and as the prices go down. And if that's part of their offseason strategy to take advantage of all of the arms that are going to be out there and rebuild a bullpen that was absolutely disastrous.
But the part that's confusing, and I agree with you, that definitely would be a strategy where you could follow. But the part that I wonder about is, okay, who's implementing that strategy and whose strategy is that? And is that person going to be in power a year from now? Because, of course, Andy McPhail heads up baseball operations there. Yep. It's pretty clear he's leaving after next year. Matt Klentak was just sort of shoved to the side. Ned Rice is overseeing things in their front office. But it's not absolutely clear that he's going to be the vision for the team in 2022. And why not pick that guy now when you have all these, you know, there have been some questions about, well, is this an effort on the part of the Phillies to save some money, which would be insane. Yep. Because, you know, the amount of money you'd spend on the incoming head of baseball operations relative to the value of the decisions that are being made right now, the cost, it's not even close. And it's why one baseball executive said to me, what the Phillies are doing this offseason is very small-minded.
Yeah. I mean, are they waiting out Theo Epstein? I don't think so. Like, I have not gotten any impression that if Theo Epstein leaves the Cubs after this upcoming season, which is the expectation that he's going to be jumping back into to a baseball job at any point. He might, not, but going back to the Phillies, it doesn't have the emotional resonance of doing it in Boston. It doesn't have the emotional resonance of doing it in Chicago for the first time in 100 years. I mean, let's put it this way. It's a very curious tack. And I think you were spot on with what you wrote.
Well, I appreciate that. And thanks for joining us. By the way, I also heard that there's a chance that Theo's exit from the Cubs might be a lot sooner than what people think. He may wind up leaving before the end of the 2021 season. So we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. Jeff, thanks for doing this. I'll be reading you every day.
Likewise, Buster. Thanks for having me.
Jumping into the numbers.
After evaluating millions of pieces of data in the blink of an eye, the winner is Cincinnati by 200 points. Bye, you worthless hunk of junk.
This is Hembo Knows.
And Hembo is Paul Embiakides, a researcher at ESPN who's a honcho on the show Get Up. He tells us he's a head honcho. I talked to Mike Greenberg, and he said that really what's going on lately is just Hembo's drinking heavily because he's a Phillies fan. He's not very happy about what's going on with that. And we'll get to that in a second. But first, with the awards, the MVPs were announced just a little while ago. Hembo, what'd you think? Freddie Freeman, Jose Abreu.
Yeah, Buster, I think that the writers in this case got both of them wrong. Both of them. It's not often that I would say that. But obviously, this year being a 60-game season, it's a tad bit different. But to me, it seems like they voted the almost sort of the exact same way that they would otherwise. And that's sort of the issue that I have here. To me, it's clear that in the American League, Shane Bieber was the player that produced the most value. And I know that there are sort of odd arguments around why people don't like voting for pitchers and all the rest of it. To me, I keep it fairly simple. He produced more value, considerably more value, over the course of the season than Jose Abreu did. And to me, that made him the clear-cut choice to win that award. I was surprised to see him so far down ballot. And in the National League, it was sort of a 1A, 1B, although I will say personally, Mookie Betts, I thought, provided more value to his team than Freddie Freeman did to his. Obviously, Freeman hit like crazy, and that seemed to me to be more of a sort of narrative-driven award, sort of a lifetime achievement type thing. Obviously, we know that the writers like to spread these things out, and Betts had just won it in the American League. But as far as I can tell, I mean, Mookie Betts was the best player on an historically good team, albeit in a shortened season, provided his team more value because he is such a well-rounded player. So if I had the vote, Shane Bieber would have been number one in for the American League for me. Mookie Betts would have been number one in the National League.
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'm aware of them. You were talking about Bieber and his impact. He actually was involved in more plate appearances, Bieber was, than Abreu was, by a factor of about 25. I know some people would look at Bieber and say, well, he just pitched in 12 games. And how much of an impact is that? Well, you know what? He actually was involved in more plate appearances than Jose Abreu. The Phillies. I wrote a column about him today and saying that they seem like they're absolutely adrift right now. They're your team. What do you think?
That's a good way to describe the Phillies. They are adrift right now. They sort of went all in this year and even last year to some extent and had not very little to show for it, nothing to show for it. And this window seems to have closed on us rather unceremoniously. Of course, the most notable player of whom might not be back is JT Realmuto, who has become a fan favorite, has become a very hashtagable player because obviously just about every Phillies fan wanted them to re-sign him. And of course, it doesn't seem like that is the case. Now, what I can't quite narrow down, Buster, though, is if this team is this team like close at all, and whether or not maybe a new general manager could sort of realign the program and maybe provide, I don't know, three or four more wins next year and maybe get a few things right on the fringes. Because in the 60 games the Phillies played, Buster, the Phillies led in 49 of them. The Dodgers and the Twins were the only teams in baseball to lead in more games than the Phillies. Obviously, wow. They were two of the best teams in baseball. The Phillies wound up missing the playoffs because of a bullpen ERA near 7. It was legitimately the worst bullpen of all time. So on one hand, it feels to me like they're so far afield that almost a rebuilding project or at least a reset might be in order. On the other hand, you might think adding a few impact arms, you sort of run it back again next year. The big question, the big elephant in the room, of course, is can they re-sign Realmuto with the Mets charging and with the Yankees maybe, you know, in position to sign a catcher? That's obviously what everyone's thinking about. My sort of unpopular opinion here is you don't overpay for the catcher. You can, because the WAR ceiling, if you will, is so much lower for that position than others, maybe you spread that money around elsewhere. But there aren't a lot of Phillies friends of mine who are all that interested in that take.
And by the way, about that, I've had executives say that to me, that when you look at the group of free agent catchers, there are a lot of good plan Bs behind JT. Like JT is clearly far and away the best player at his position in baseball. But in the free agent market, from James McCann, many other veterans available, there are a lot of ways to go where you can hold down the position and be credible. We talked to Steve Gelbs. We talked to Jeff Passan about the New York Mets extensively. Besides the Mets, give me a team to watch.
Oh, the Indians are the team to watch this winter, Buster. To me, they're even more interesting than the Mets because they have the crown jewel of the offseason. They have Francisco Lindor. And I just went on a tirade and said Mookie Betts should have won the MVP. That could be Francisco Lindor. Look at how impactful Mookie Betts was on that team. Look just the year before how impactful Patrick Corbin was on that team. Obviously, that was a free agent signing. But each of the last two World Series champions made really impactful moves the season before they won it. Francisco Lindor, for my money, is the best player that could change teams this offseason. But the fascinating piece of this to me is that the Indians are still really good. This pitching staff, from a run prevention standpoint, just had the best year, albeit in a shortened season, in the history of the American League. So you wonder, A, how much they can get for him, and B, how much present-day talent they can get for him. Because the Indians really don't need to sort of hit the reset button the way that some teams do. They're already – Jose Ramirez just was the runner-up for the American League Most Valuable Player Award. This is a team that's really good right now. Obviously, they have this sort of prized asset. This is the year, the offseason, that they're likely to unload him. But to me, that is the most interesting team in baseball this offseason because they have the crown jewel and because they still might position themselves to be good again next year.
And before you go, we've talked about the big names in free agency. Give me a value free agent, because that's really, for most teams, is going to be the focus, finding undervalued assets in the free agent market.
I'm going to give you two names, Buster, one position player, one pitcher. The position player is Tommy La Stella, a player that led Major League Baseball in strikeout to walk rate last year. He doesn't really add much value with the glove, but he at least can play a few different positions and sort of does add value in that way. This is a player who last season, on 358 swings, produced 53 hard hit balls against 40 swings and misses. We're talking about an elite bat-to-ball profile and hand-eye coordination. And you know me, like, I'm always interested in finding market inefficiencies. This is a unique player, and that kind of player provides a lot of value. On the pitching side, Jake Odorizzi, to me, is a sleeping giant in this free agent class. This is a player 1 year removed from us talking about whether or not he deserved a nine-figure contract. He had a comparable season to Zach Wheeler in 2019, and obviously Wheeler signed a nine-figure deal with the Phillies. Odorizzi has stuff that profiles plus-plus when he's healthy. Obviously, that was not the case in 2020. But again, a unique, a four-seamer, a cutter, a splitty, a very unique pitch profile. And again, I like finding value in the margins. Anytime you can find a player who can provide you upside in different ways than the average, you know, sort of run-of-the-mill player out there that profiles a little bit more in the mainstream, I like those people. So Tommy La Stella and Jake Odorizzi are those people for me.
Plus, Jake is a really good guest on our podcast, which, you know, it's got to be worth even more, right?
Absolutely. And that goes without saying on his Baseball Reference page. And before you let me go, Buster, and Taylor, you know this already, I have been inundated by agents from Hollywood asking about my ability to sing professionally now after this extraordinary rendition that I provided and vindicated by Dashmore Confessional in our last time. I want you to know that this might be the last time that we speak, because this might be the last time that you can even get to me without going through my agent.
I saw that on social media and I went to election results. All right. Take care. Thank you.
Later, boys.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for a Thursday evening. First up, we have Oren Sleepwalker at Oren83. Oren writes in, what is the reasoning of having the individual award winners declared that late after the World Series concludes? It's sure not taking that long to count the votes. Why not announce them right after the World Series or even in the middle of the playoffs like the NBA?
Oren, keep this in mind. Major League Baseball does not control any of the awards. Those are controlled by the Baseball Writers Association of America. And I suspect the reason why they wait is because they get more attention. Like if they do it in the middle of the World Series, there might be some controversy or some decision, like Kevin Cash's decision to take out Blake Snell, that's going to overshadow that. And so the writers have always held it to the offseason. And I do think it's, you know, people ask all the time, well, why do they wait and why don't they make the decision on MVPs until after the World Series is over? No, the award is for the regular season and the writers turn in the votes right at the end of the regular season.
Got it. Next up, we got Rick Gabler at Rick_Gabler. He writes in, does the volatile market help or hurt the position of teams looking to flip 2021 free agents to be like Lindor?
Boy, I think it hurts them. Generally speaking, let's face it, all assets, the value, the perceived value is down. But I think that the return that the Indians would get on Lindor is going to be pretty close to what the Mets got for, or excuse me, the Red Sox got for Mookie Betts. It's going to be something close to that, where you get a prime guy like an Alex Verdugo as a centerpiece of the deal and two other decent pieces.
Next up, we got Debbie Gammons Brown, DGB. She writes in, what is your response to the approach the Red Sox took in hiring back Alex Cora, and why do you think they considered other candidates?
Well, I think they may have just taken the opportunity to talk to other people, you know, for exploratory purposes. I've heard this, you know, some of the best general managers like to talk with people with other teams, even if they don't think that person's going to fit the job that they're interviewing for. Maybe down the road they become a bench coach, or maybe they get a front office job. You don't turn down the opportunity to talk to really smart people. I was surprised, though, that it took as long as it did for them to lock in the Alex Cora hiring. I said back in September, I thought the Red Sox would have been crazy not to pick Alex. From what I understand, it was very touch and go as to whether or not Alex or Sam Fold was going to be the manager.
Interesting. Last one up, we got Jeff Brooks at JEBrew5. He writes in, should the White Sox dig deep and make a big multi-year deal for Trevor Bauer?
I mentioned that there are folks with other teams are saying, if you're going to have Tony La Russa as the manager, you better make sure he's got the players. Mm-hmm. And I suspect that there's going to be more pressure on Jerry Reinsdorf to make a big splash. Is Trevor Bauer going to be that guy? I don't know. I kind of agree with Jeff and with Steve. I look at the Mets and I kind of wonder about a fit there.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Keep them coming as we march on through the offseason. Buster, what's our plan here? What are we thinking as we go into the offseason?
You know, I think that the next one that we're going to do might be after that non-tender date on December 2nd. So maybe in the morning of December 3rd. Does that make sense? Because that there are going to be so many decisions on players like Chris Bryant that we're going to want to talk about. And then, you know, depending on if there's another big free agent signing, we'll do another podcast before the Christmas, before Christmas holiday.
That sounds good to me. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your podcast, because that way when we do that big free agent, when they sign, we do the podcast, it shows up on your phone just like magic. Thanks, everyone.
And that's it for today. My thanks to Jeff, Steve, Hembo, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and especially stay safe with the coronavirus numbers that we're seeing all across the country. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/PodCenter. Baseball Tonight. the podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.